everyone, and welcome to Baird's IPO Reboot Series, where executives can learn the ABCs of going public. I'm Tom Shadwell. I'm a director on Baird's Equity Capital Markets Desk, based here in beautiful Milwaukee, Wisconsin. In today's episode number 10, we're going to talk about public company investor relations. I'm delighted to be joined today by Alex Wellens, co-founder and managing partner at the Blue Shirt Group. Alex, do you mind turning over to you to give a little bit of background on your firm and yourself?
Great. Thanks, Tom. Really appreciate you having me on. My partners and I founded the Blue Shirt Group in 1999. So we're approaching our 25th anniversary in business, which is amazing to think about. Headquartered in San Francisco, we have an office in New York and Los Angeles and a few other places around the US. We also have an Asia practice and have someone covering Europe. And we've been very fortunate to work with some of the highest profile IPOs, mostly in the technology industry, but also in some consumer and healthcare and other industries as well. And my personal focus is on our IPO advisory work. I've been very fortunate to work on over 50 IPOs in my career and cross sectors. And then we carry forward and work with companies after the IPO and provide ongoing investor relations services for many years after the IPO. We also have a very strong strategic media and PR business. And then we do projects and analyst days and special events and things like that, all Wall Street focused.
Great. Thank you, Alex. I appreciate you joining today. We'll dive right into the questions here, I think. So we talk about preparation a lot in this series. So maybe the best starting place today is to talk about what are kind of the most critical elements from an investor relations perspective to have in place prior to the actual listing itself.
Great question, Tom. So we'll talk, I think, a little bit later about some of the key activities before an IPO, but you know, today's session is mainly about public IR. But so specifically answering your question, what do you really need to have in place, you know, on that critical moment when you go public, hopefully ring the bell and drink some champagne in New York? And what do you really have to have ready? So I'll just note a couple of things. Number one is the IR website, and that is typically built in conjunction with one of the providers from the stock exchanges, either NASDAQ or NYSE. And that is a really critical source of information for investors and research analysts. There are different modules and ways to build IR websites. We believe very strongly that you want to have a very clean, easy to navigate site without a lot of extraneous information, especially when you first go public. That said, we also believe that once you've been public for a while, it's really smart to add additional, maybe more engaging content to the IR website. And so, for example, most companies that go public shoot a really nice IPO roadshow video. And rather than just using that during the roadshow itself, it's really nice to slice that up and put portions of it up on the IR website. That's typically done 25 days, you know, after once you go public, there's a 25-day post-effective period, they call it, which is really essentially a quiet period. And the equity research analysts will typically launch coverage of the company 25 days after the IPO. So then you have a little more liberty for adding some more engaging content on the IR website. Also, there are some things for the site that don't launch until later. So for example, you wouldn't list the equity research analysts that are on the IPO or covering the company until they actually launch coverage. So IR website is really important. And, you know, there are a lot of do's and don'ts around that that we'd be happy to talk with anybody about who is interested. So that's number one. Second point I want to make is that it's really critical. This is, sometimes this is overlooked right before the IPO, but it's really critical to get the full share count right to the analysts for EPS calculation purposes. And that typically happens right before the launch of the IPO roadshow itself. This sounds very straightforward and that everybody should get this right, but you'd be shocked at how many IPOs don't take this last step. And the reason, just so I can explain it a little bit, or the rationale for it is, most companies when they go public are either are not profitable on a GAAP basis. Some are, most aren't. Most companies that are going public are focused on EBITDA and EBITDA profitability. Therefore, it's really critical to have the analyst models right all the way down to the EPS line when, frankly, EPS is not the focus for most pre-IPO companies. And if you don't get the, and often right before an IPO, there are reverse stock splits or some changes to the share count. So it's really important to get that correct for the analysts, because if they're using a wrong share count for EPS, once you report the first quarter as a public company, if the analysts don't have the right numbers and aren't focused and all in the right band, you can look like you potentially have a huge miss right on your first earnings call right out of the box. So again, happy to provide some more details on this, but it is, I wanted to mention it because it is something that gets overlooked often, and it is something that often doesn't get nailed down precisely until right before the company goes public. The third thing and final thing I'll mention on this topic is we think it's really important, and this is part of the early preparation, to have done at least one mock earnings call or press release before you go public. That first earnings call out of the box is critical to the IR effort moving forward. And put very simply, you don't want the first time that you've done an earnings call to be when you're public. You want to have practiced it a couple of times. And again, something we're happy to talk about with any company that's interested. And many of the CEOs and CFOs that we have done with this as part of our IPO prep process have said that it was one of the most valuable things they did. And that when they do their first earnings call, they're not nearly as stressed because they felt like they have done this, actually practice it before, several times before, and they're completely prepared. And for those IR professionals watching, that's your job, that's our job, that's what we want to make the CEOs and CFOs feel like, that they are extremely prepared for whatever is coming their way.
Those are all great points. And I would just reiterate from personal experience and having read hundreds of IPO prospectuses, figuring out the share count solely through kind of like the documentation can be very complex. And so I think that's a great practical takeaway to just to make sure to communicate that directly to the analyst and the kind of investment community, so there's no kind of confusion around that first earnings. And question number two, you talked to like executives or public company executives for the first time, you kind of hear them talk about the juggling act between the investor relations function and kind of everything else they have going on an operating level. I'd be curious how you talk to clients about how they should kind of balance that approach between the day job and investor relations specifically.
Yeah, I mean, look, going public, and I say this to a lot of when we first meet companies before they're going public or, you know, thinking about an IPO, I always say this is a big commitment. Going public is a massive undertaking. And as you said, all of these executives have day jobs. But so that the whole process is very demanding and rigorous. And then being public is also demanding and rigorous. And it does. So your question about balancing the day job with the IR effort is really important. And planning is a big part of this. So in advance of going public, you want to think about the IR calendar. So when you're private, as far as investors, you're probably thinking about your quarterly board meetings that you do, and maybe you do some sort of call with your pre-IPO investors on a quarterly basis or every 6 months or whatever. But it is really important to have the senior management team think about, okay, what does the first year look like after the IPO in terms of, and that is clearly starting to be centered around, when are we going to report earnings? When do we do our board meetings in relation to reporting earnings? What are the quiet periods? Generally speaking, we recommend that companies have a quiet period from the last 2 weeks of the quarter through when you report earnings. So that opens up essentially about a 4 to 6 week open window each quarter where you can do IR activities, whether those are conferences, non-deal roadshows, virtual events, industry events that, and I think we may talk about that a little bit later, that investors and analysts attend. We think it's really important, best practices to try to do at least one conference where you have a public webcast each quarter. I think that's great from a Reg FD perspective and also helps with marketing and helps to continue getting a company's name out there. And I think it's important to remember that I think there's a fallacy among some management teams that just because they go public, they assume every investor will know them and know their story. And that is absolutely not the case. So while the IPO, you know, during the IPO process, during the roadshow, you'll probably talk to 100 investors. Most companies will have done a lot of non-deal roadshows and testing the waters meetings prior to an IPO. But don't assume that investors or analysts really know your story, other than the analyst on your deal will certainly know it and your top investors will. But the IPO is also, it's a branding event for the company. It's a marketing event for the company. And you want to think about marketing to a Wall Street audience. And when you go public and then start doing your earnings calls, that is building a library of information that investors and analysts will go back to. We talked about the IR website. They'll go back to the IR website. Once you start doing quarterly conference calls, they will listen to those replays and read those transcripts. So we think that as, especially in the first couple of quarters out of the, after your IPO, you want to make sure to go speak at a great conference. Baird does great events. A lot of the banks do great banking, do great conferences when they offer webcasts. And that's really important. It also, you know, broadens your base and allows people not just in the room to hear the story, but again, anybody can go back and listen to those later. So I think it's really important to have a plan, to be efficient. And again, this is a commitment. And, you know, I think we can talk later about, and maybe this rolls into, you know, another topic, but, you know, who should be doing what, but that commitment word, I can't underemphasize, you know, overemphasize it. It's really, this is, especially for small and mid-cap companies, this does become a big part of the executive's job, and you have to be ready for that and committed to that.
Yeah, and that is a great lead-in, I think, to the next thing I was hoping to talk about here, which is kind of which executives are the ones that tend to take the lead on the IR front. What's kind of the best setup for long-term success that you've seen?
Yeah, so look, our belief is that at least for the first couple of quarters, and probably the first year as a public company, it really needs to be both the CEO and CFO. Those executives should be relatively joined at the hip and to the extent possible, doing all of the events. And I don't mean every investor call that comes in from any random hedge fund. You know, here really I'm talking about conferences, non-deal roadshows, public appearances, earnings calls, those sorts of things. I think it's really important to remember that for small or mid-cap companies, investors are buying the management team as much as they're buying the company. And you really have to establish that credibility and track record with investors. And look, if things are going well and you're executing in your first quarters out of the box, you've beaten and raised and you've done everything you said you were going to do, and the market is behaving normally and hopefully your stock is behaving relatively normally, once you establish that track record, then you can start to potentially weave other executives in. And often you're able to reduce the CEO's participation in some of those events, because, you know, in the long term, it's not realistic or a good idea to have your CEO doesn't need to be at every IR event. You can start to mix things up. You can maybe do some product focused events or bring in a president or a COO or a CMO even on some Wall Street events. I'll close out this topic by just saying this also does vary by market cap, right? If you are a very large cap company, investors don't expect the CEO to be on every Wall Street event. But again, even for big cap companies, I think it's really important that for the beginning, the winning philosophy is to have both the CEO and CFO, as I said, relatively joined at the hip. And then once you've established that track record and hopefully things are going well, you can get a little more flexible.
Yeah, no, some great highlights there. I think we've talked about it a little bit and you've brought it up a few times, but maybe let's focus in on kind of the earnings call itself. I think it would be good for some of these private companies to kind of hear your view in terms of like the typical preparation timeline leading up to the earnings call. What does that all look like?
Sure. So I think hopefully it's coming through, like, be really organized. And you know, and again, if the company is an IR internal person, they may take on some of this role if they're working with, hopefully if they're working with Blue Shirt, that's a big part of our job. And it really starts with a debrief call, typically a couple of weeks after the quarter ends. You know, we're in pretty constant touch with our CEOs and CFOs. So even before the quarter is over, we have a pretty good feel for where things are coming in. But I think having a kickoff call, ideally with the CEO, the CFO, maybe the CMO, maybe some product people, to really understand, okay, even if the numbers aren't completely locked yet, how'd the quarter come in? Clearly, once we're public, how did it come in versus what consensus is out there from the analyst models? But getting that kickoff call and understanding what the top three or four, what really happened during the quarter, what drove the results, what are the three or four top level messages that we want to communicate, is really important to set the tone and get the process kicked off properly. Then you have a very detailed timeline counting backwards from the day that you're going to report earnings for drafting sessions and Q&A sessions and what the various materials need to look like. I think it's really important to recognize that for private companies, you're starting with a blank sheet of paper. And that's why I mentioned mock earnings calls before. That's why this is so important. You want to have thought through in advance, hey, when we're public, what will that earnings release look like? And that's a combination of best practices from other companies. How do the peers report? Do they use a regular press release? Do they do their earnings on Zoom? Do they do a shareholder letter? You know, again, you're starting with a blank piece of paper. So you really want to start early and think about this, the materials and the content well in advance. Two other quick comments here. Number one is most companies pre-record the audio of the earnings call. That may be a surprise to some people. Everybody thinks they're doing it on the fly. Recording the prepared remarks from the CEO and CFO is really a best practice, and it reduces the stress level of the executives because they can record it. If something doesn't go perfectly, you can edit it and redo it and re-record it. And that reduces a lot of the stress on earnings day of not having to read it live. So that's one just tip. And then the second and last point on this topic is to really over prepare for Q&A. And that's the same during the IPO process. Like, let's face it, we're dealing, if you're talking about going public or being a public company executive, these are world-class business leaders. They can put slide present, anybody can put a slide presentation together. You can put a good script together. I think both in the IPO itself and on earnings calls, these things are like won and lost during Q&A. And there is a real art to being good at it. There are some tips, and you know, there's lots of presentation trainers, but we spend a lot of time coaching our management team, and you will have a lot of this coaching during the IPO, but really over preparing for Q&A is again a real key to success. And there's nothing, you know, it's very satisfying after one of those earnings calls when they go well, to really feel like you're prepared. You're not going to be able to predict every question, but you should be able to get really close. And it's a great feeling when the management teams come out of a call feeling like they were really prepared and they hopefully knocked it out of the park from a Q&A standpoint.
Yeah, that's a great point, because you are going on the record in that part. You're doing it live. So I think over preparing is always a good thing, especially when it comes to the Q&A, because you will be compared, I think, to some of the other kind of comps in your universe, because the investors are reading through all that information and digesting it. So I think so question number five, we've been kind of talking about a little bit, but maybe if you had any more direct advice for executives in terms of like, what's the appropriate amount of industry events or the appropriate amount of NDRs that a company attends kind of in any given calendar year?
Yeah, so this goes back to one of my previous comments about having a plan. Obviously, plans change, but look, hopefully you're talking about let's talk about a company that is doing well, stock is doing well. And particularly for that first, call it the first year out of the box, you're going to have there's going to be more, hopefully, demands on your time than supply of your time. So you really want to be very thoughtful. As we talked before, you've got essentially a 4 to 6 week open window each quarter where you can do events. So you want to map out in advance, generally speaking, what that calendar is going to look like. Most IPOs will have anywhere from 6 to 15 banks on their cover, on their S1, that many analysts covering them. Let's say, let's use the number 12. So there's 12 months in the year. Let's say you have 12 analysts, but you can't market every month, right? So every analyst, every bank on your deal is going to want you to go to their conference, do a non-deal roadshow, participate in other events. So those, just on its own, just sort of working with your banking syndicate, and these are the banks that took you public. These are the analysts that are providing research coverage. So you want to support them. They're going to hopefully support the company. You want to support them. And frankly, in the first year, you may not be able to get to every bank on your syndicate. But we think it's important to try to spread things around appropriately. Think geographically. Obviously you want to go to New York and Boston and San Francisco, probably those three cities at least twice a year. You want to think about other markets, the Midwest. I think you said you were in Milwaukee, the Milwaukee, Chicago, Minneapolis kind of, different centers around the country. You also want to think about Europe and Canada and maybe Asia, depending on the type of company you are. And if you have business in those areas, there are great investors all over the world. So again, I think it's a balancing supply and demand issue. You mentioned also industry events, and we think it's also really smart to take advantage of those, because those are events that bankers and research analysts and investors attend. So if you are a security software company, the RSA conference in San Francisco is it's a must attend. Every company is there. All the research analysts go, all the investors go. So you should think about maybe hosting an event there for, you know, Wall Street focused event, and maybe do a customer panel, something like that, or do booth tours if that's appropriate. You're a consumer company, CES, see how many people still really go to CES, but that could be important for you. If you are a advertising or ad tech company, there's a ad tech in Ad Week in New York in the fall is another big event. So we encourage companies you got to look at banking conferences, you got to look at non-deal roadshows, which we believe can be more effective than conferences, because conferences tend to be a little bit like speed dating. They're great, and you can do a webcast there, so we definitely recommend them. But doing non-targeted non-deal roadshows is really important, and then balancing that with some of these industry events and taking advantage of those. And then obviously, if you're a really big company and you host your own event, like a Salesforce, we just had a Dreamforce here in San Francisco, and all of the banks did events there. All of the research analysts were there. So you want to think about these and how you can work those into your IR planning and calendar.
Yeah, a lot of times it just comes down to bandwidth. So I think it's get the list and then make sure that you're hitting the ones that you really need to first, and just balancing again that kind of bandwidth you have, especially being a public company.
Yeah, sorry, Tom. One thing I'd also recommend, and you don't have to do like the banks in order of the biggest banks first, right? Like, so there's no absolutely you want to support the banks that have been most supportive, but there are banks that are really good in certain regions. Tom, you said you were in Milwaukee. I imagine you have great investor, and there's some great investors, long-term investors there. So yeah, you want to think about that and think about regions, but it's not the case that you only work with the biggest banks. And, you know, it's important to take a thoughtful, balanced approach to the whole schedule. So sorry to jump back in there, but.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And we do have great coverage of the central U.S., especially the Midwest region, where a lot of our employees are based, including myself. So maybe getting to the end of the episode here, I like to ask the same question to all my guests. So if there's, and it doesn't have to be limited to just today's topic, but if you had three pieces of advice for a company that's thinking about going public, what would those be?
Sure. So, number one, which I mentioned before, is start early. And we found that with pre-IP, too many companies wait until too late to start the sort of IPO prep activities. The formal part of the IPO process, when you select your banks and start drafting your S-1 to when you actually go public, is about 6 months. And during that period, there's a lot of milestones related to a successful IPO, and you're meeting with investors, you're working with analysts, but generally speaking, you're pretty focused on getting the deal done and getting, and you're also limited by the SEC as to what you can say. And too many companies wait, start that up, and don't take advantage of the period before you pick your banks. And you know, we strongly recommend that in the year or so before you pick your banks and start the formal part of the IPO process, you're doing two things. One is raising visibility externally, and that's by meeting with the research analyst and meeting with the top investors. If you're a software company, meet with the top 25 buyers of software IPOs. Again, before testing the waters and before the formal part of the IPO process. Meet with the equity research analysts so you get to know them all and they get to know your story, because often you're picking some of the banks that are on your IPO for the research analysts, not just the bankers and not just the ECM team. So that's really important. So starting early, and again, I could spend an hour just talking about that, but that's a really key message. So that's number one. Number two is making the right long-term decisions for the business. The IPO is not the finish line. It's the starting line of the next stage of evolution for your company in your first day of life as a public company. So, and that planning starts early. If I had to narrow investor relations down to two words, it's managing expectations. And that starts when you're doing your IPO. That doesn't start when you're a public company. So pick the right KPIs, take the long-term view. How are we going to give guidance? What disclosures are we going to give as a public company? And in our opinion, don't focus on, you know, maximizing the IPO price is not necessarily always the winning strategy. You want to think about, you want to be, and we always do, we don't want to help you just have a great IPO. We want to help you become a great long-term company for the next several decades. So starting early, which I talked about a minute ago, but then managing expectations and making the right long-term decisions is really important. And then the third, I guess I'll just return to that commitment comment. This is a, going public is a big commitment. Being a public company executive is a big commitment. Executives are typically locked up, that you can't sell shares for 6 months in most cases. And selling shares by management is, you know, not typically seen as a great message. So, you know, think about things like that in advance. And again, think about things in the long term. Get things set up properly during the IPO process. And that's rationalizing the cap table, making sure that everybody knows that they're not going to be able to sell for the foreseeable future. So do what you need to do before, you know, before the IPO takes place. And then get the company prepared. And again, going back to things like mock earnings calls, like get the finance team prepared that, okay, the fifth week or the fourth week or the sixth week after every quarter, we're going to be reporting earnings and we got to be ready to rock and roll. So it's a commitment throughout the organization. It is a change in mindset from being a private company to dealing with public investors. And you really have to be up for that. And you know, look, it can be one of the most exciting and rewarding things for management teams. They're often founder-led companies. You've built this company. You have achieved tremendous success in your sector. And you need to continue, that needs to continue to evolve, and you need to continue to show that leadership in the public markets. And that's really by taking investor relations seriously, having a commitment, and doing as excellent a job in this area as you do in every part of your business.
Alex, all great points. I think we'll end today's episode there on a high note. Really appreciate your time. I'm sure the viewers do as well. If you'd like to get a hold of Alex or myself, you can find our contact info on our respective company websites or shoot us a LinkedIn message. Alex, thanks again.
Thanks, Tom.